With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Clash. So on Monday, Arnie wanted your clothes, but this is the sequel, so there's more of everything. Two Terminators, more action, and now Arnie wants your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle. Yep, from 1991, we're talking Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Same make.
These were taken at the West Highland Police Station, 1984. You were there.
Same model.
These were taken today.
You have to let me see my son. He's in great danger.
At the end of the show, we will declare the greatest Terminator movie ever. But which one will it be? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Potters. Men like you built the hydrogen bomb. Men like you thought it up. You think you're so creative. You don't know what it's really like to create something, to create a life.
I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
How are you both?
Really
good.
Well.
Yep. So, Big. I feel like, you know, we had a week off last week with Stay Tuned and the Cable Guy.
What do you mean a week off?
Well, if you let me finish, can't be reasoned with, can't be bargained with. It's Chris Tilley. I was going to say, in terms of the scale of the declaration we're making at the end, no one was like, I must know which was better, Stay Tuned or the Cable Guy. But before that, Indy, big declaration to make. This is another big declaration to make, the greatest Terminator movie ever. Just trying to build up a bit of tension, Chris.
Okay.
Really undermine that, and me in the process, so a little bit angry, but, you know, war off a duck's back. So, very quickly, if you haven't subscribed to us, if you would be kind enough to do so, that would be amazing. We are at Clash Pod, Clash of the Titles. Go on Apple Podcasts, subscribe there, do this on Spotify. If you can leave a rating and review, that's awesome as well. And if you do leave a review, there's a chance that it might be read out on the show by Chris Tilley, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly, which sounds a bit like this.
This is from the old Metazzel, who says, long-time listener, first-time reviewer. I love this podcast so much. Big laughs, solid insight, and just a really genuine appreciation of cinema all round. Highly recommend going back and listening from the beginning. Not that you need to for any kind of story arc or anything like that. There's just a lot to love, so why deprive yourself?
Oh,
so I'd like to say thanks to old Metazzel. But actually, we've been working really hard on this two-year story arc. And the big twist is coming very soon.
Ooh,
so
how exciting.
So watch this space. Yep.
You're actually a goodie.
Oh, and you actually hate women. Yeah, wow, that's building tension. I'm looking forward to this twist. Well done. That's a tension-building exercise. There has been a bit of a story arc. I feel we've grown. I haven't listened back to any of the old ones, but I do remember them being a little more fraught than they are these days.
They? Yeah.
It was
nerves on my part. Yeah, it was.
And it was Chris and I were just sort of getting to know each other. Mm. And then we did and realised we just didn't like each other.
Figure out how far we could push it and then pushed way past.
So this is part two of Terminator 2. Our films this week have come from some friends on another pod. Chris, remind us who our friends are.
Kevin and Will on The Best Bits, goes to The Best Bits. Great fun. We love it. And they just did one on best robot scenes in movies, which ties in nicely with this.
So check out The Best Bits. It is very good. Monday, we began our journey in 1984 when I wasn't even born. But today, V continues the story in 1991 when I wasn't even born. V, take us on a journey.
A lot can happen in 7 years. One minute, you're an expectant parent. Fearful for the future, sure. Sad about facing the ups and downs of motherhood alone, but excited to be on the cusp of your next big adventure. The next minute, you're a lone wolf terrorist banged up in solitary under the care of sadistic mental health professionals, estranged from your child, having given him nothing but a messiah complex, a challenging attitude to state-mandated care, and the skills to survive only if he needs to scam someone's debit card during the fallout of a nuclear apocalypse. Anyway, Sarah's in lockup. John's 10 years old with an attitude problem. Arnie's literally back, but he's a goodie. Robert Patrick has the world's scariest run and will end proceedings with a fight in an industrial setting where Sarah Connor presses big buttons and saves mankind. Terminator 2, same but different, question mark. Same but better, question mark. I honestly don't know. Let's find out. I don't know.
Very good. I mean, you said a lot can happen in 7 years, including having a 10-year-old son. That's a lot.
Wait, does it not add up?
No, he had to make the time difference bigger than it actually was. I mean, the time between making the films is 7 years, but the time between the films is not 7 years.
Right. Yeah. I remember the button pushing. Did she push a button in it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
I think you're just pushing Vicky's buttons right now.
Oh, I don't mind.
That bit. No, she doesn't mind. She loves it. Probably loves it. Okay, cool.
All right, so I don't have an interesting story. I've seen this once before, maybe twice, but I don't have any memories of watching it. I was excited to rewatch it. That's kind of it. What about you?
Watched it on VHS shortly after it came out for the first time. Bloody loved it. Hadn't seen Terminator, as I said, on Monday at this point, but didn't matter. Just thought this was incredible. Watched it about 4 or 5 times since then, but nothing quite compares to that first time as a teenager in the early 90s when you see this and you see the T-1000, the moment it walks out of the truck fire and you see the liquid metal form for the first time. Just mind-blowing. Mm. Never seen anything like it before in my life. And I just remember being agog, which is a word I don't think I've used on the pod before.
No.
But I was agog at what I was seeing.
I remember seeing the teaser in the cinema, and that was exciting. And I watched Terminator not long before. That was exciting. And it felt like a true event that summer. And also, I was old enough to sneak into 15s. Well, when I say sneak, I'd get my mum to buy the tickets.
Mm.
And so this is one of the first 15s I saw that summer. So seeing this on the big screen as well was immense. And it was just...
Have you ever seen anyone thrown out for not... Because that feeling of sneaking in when you're that age is pretty daring. Mm. Like, it feels like you are going to get the tap on the shoulder. Excuse me, you're not old enough to see this film. I don't think anyone ever got thrown out.
I've told you I was about 7 years old, probably. When did Aliens come out?
86.
So yeah, I was 7 years old and we were walking into the Odeon in Leeds and my mum and dad were going to see Aliens. And I thought I was going to see Aliens only to be diverted off with my gran and little brother to see Care Bears the movie. And I attempted to sneak out of that and into Aliens. And it wasn't the cinema, but my gran who put the kibosh on that cunning plan. So I had to sit through Care Bears the fucking movie.
I don't know what's more terrifying.
I never even expressed any interest in the Care Bears. It was like, of all the movies you could have put us in, it felt like some sort of weird punishment. It's like, not only are we going to see Aliens, but you're going to see a movie that isn't for you. You're 7 now. Even you know the Care Bears are fucking bullshit.
I love that film.
Oh, no, it was bad.
Seen it loads.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I've done some research this week. So, I mean, you were so good on T1, you were quite quick. So if I wander a bit, just tell me to crack
really?
On, yeah.
I think it was actually one of our longer pods.
Chris, really?
Chris said it was going to be quick, and once again, I chose to prove him wrong.
I didn't feel as frustrated as I normally do when you're going on and on.
Really pushing my buttons now.
There you go. You see, you love it too, though. Okay, so the Terminator is a smash. So discussions about a sequel do start almost immediately. But legal and rights issues are what delayed things. So as you said, Hemdale Film owned the rights. James Cameron and Arnie were not keen on working with them. Schwarzenegger saying, we wanted to stay as far away from them as we could. So then eventually...
Does he say why?
No, I couldn't find out why. They just, I don't know, they didn't like him. And they'd sort of sworn not to make it without the other, so right. It wasn't going to happen. But eventually, just through time, Hemdale have financial troubles. And so Schwarzenegger goes to Carol Corp.
He loves this play, doesn't he?
He
loves this play. They're in financial troubles. Mario!
Yeah, Mario! Can you
Mario,
buy it?
Mario got a plan. Yeah.
So Mario Casso pays Hemdale, well, I read, $5 million to sort out the rights. Everything's sorted by May 1990. The date is important because then they decide to aim for the 4th of July release, so July the 3rd, 91.
It's nuts. Yeah. It's nuts that
absolutely
they did all this
mad.
In a year.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it when I read that. I was like, is that right? Jesus.
It's crazy, isn't it?
1 year.
Now, so obviously in the intervening years, so as you said, Chris, the shape changing liquid metal aspect of the T-1000 was something that James Cameron wanted in the first Terminator film, but it actually wasn't technically possible.
And what I didn't get to say, because I'd actually trailed it at the start of the last episode, is also he'd heard that Carpenter was making something similar about a shape-shifting monster. And he didn't know exactly what Carpenter was doing, but he didn't want to be look like he was copying his mate.
Oh.
Because he was already copying him by doing a Halloween.
Yeah.
So yeah, obviously that was the thing. But that was sort of how the thing influenced.
I wouldn't have drawn a through line between the thing and Terminator if he had been able to do it back then.
No.
I think it would have been too different.
And he knew it would be expensive. So Mario Casso said that Cameron said to him, this is going to be an expensive movie because I'm going to do so many amazing effects you've never seen before. In fact, let me go spend the money and show you how it will look. So he made like a presentation of the effects. And Mario Casso, in this interview I read, said it cost, this presentation that he did before the movie was even shot, was around $17 million to show him what it was going to look like. But he said, when you saw the way he was going to do it, you fell from your chair.
Because this was, at the time, this would go on to be the most expensive movie ever made.
Yeah. So James Cameron and William Wishart.
Which weirdly, just very quickly, when you hear that now, I think it comes with bad connotations. I think when someone talks about this is going to be the most expensive movie ever made, or one of them, like when you think about John Carter or something, like it's sort of like, that doesn't mean as much. But back then, in the 90s, when people said Terminator 2 is the most expensive movie ever made, that was an exciting sentence to hear. You were like, what am I going to see?
I think because we knew it was going to be, a lot of money would be spent on effects, and we knew that we had a big star, that there was something to be excited about, because for the money, the promise is you're going to see something you've never seen before.
And it's the guy that did Aliens.
Yeah.
So you saw where he took that to the next.
And also, didn't half that $108 million or something go on fees for Cameron and Arnie? Like, they got paid.
He got paid a lot of money.
What a lot of money.
Yeah. James Cameron writes it with William Wisher.
Who I listened to a podcast called Script Apart. I think it was called Script Apart. Recently, where they did a sort of interview with William Wisher about this film. And he was saying that he would, for the 7 years in between both movies, he played racquetball with Cameron every week. And so they developed this for 7 years, this idea, because they were just hanging out with each other. And so that's how they managed to sort of get through all the different ideas. I'm sure you're going to say some of them, how they sort of whittled it down to this.
But didn't Cameron say, he didn't do any actual writing on it?
Yeah, had to give him a credit, didn't want to. The first shooting draft, so it was pared down. So the initial script was a lot longer. There are some sequences that didn't make it in. John defeats Skynet, breaking into the time displacement lab, and you see him sending Carl Reese back, and then discovers a room filled with unactivated Terminators. But that doesn't make it into the shooting script.
Didn't both those ideas make it into Salvation, though?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, I think both of them are in there.
And before they even got to shooting script, they toyed with the idea of having two Schwarzeneggers as well.
Yeah.
One Schwarzenegger fighting another one, which I think would have been cool. We hadn't seen that before, really.
Yeah.
But Cameron decided it was too much of a gimmick. And to make him an underdog, he didn't want him to fight himself. He wanted to fight something that you would be scared of, that was unknown.
So the script that gets distributed is 124 pages. BJ Rack, who's a co-producer on the film, recalled the day it arrived and said, we all looked at it and we were horrified. Excuse me. It was going to be the biggest picture ever made. Every sequence was like the ending of Die Hard. And obviously they've got, by this point, that's around July. So they've got like less than
yeah, less than a year to get everything done and dusted. So that's quite scary. In order to get it filmed, I read that James Cameron spent Christmas Eve editing, but he bought an RV so he could have meetings on his way to the set. So I sort of imagine him like Scooby-Doo, like pulling up outside your house, get in, and then drives you to work, shouting at you. So casting, Arnie is back, obviously.
My favourite camera impression is one that French and Saunders did on one of their Christmas specials where he's directing Titanic and he's on like one of those, like a jib chair, a director's chair that's attached to a big mechanical arm, and he's like floating around the set with his shotgun firing it off when anyone annoys him.
It's weird, isn't it? Because you talked about like the quiet intensity of the man, like everything you read about him, he is unrelenting and terrifying. You know, he's famous for saying that was perfect, do it again, things like that. But when you see an interview with him, he doesn't look, he's quite slight. I don't know, but yeah.
He's,
you know,
big though. He's a really tall guy.
Okay.
With a temper.
Yeah. Arnie gets 11 to 15 million up front, which apparently some of the payment took the form of a Gulfstream G3 jet.
That's what I read. Yeah. Can you imagine that? So your fee on it, yeah. It's a jet?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, he wanted it.
Fucking and
he's,
jet.
He's got a lot of side agreements that mean he's going to get some profit participation.
A jet? You get a plane for doing a job. Just listen to that sentence.
I don't think I'd want the plane. What are you going to do with it?
Fly like, places.
Yeah, I suppose.
What else are you going to do with it?
Sell it for money. Just give me the money. But also, obviously, the big thing is Arnie is good. He said he didn't want my kids' eyes like someone that goes around and kills. And James Cameron said, you know, do you want someone who's looked up to by millions of kids? Because obviously, in the intervening years, Arnie is the most megastar that there is. And he's, you know, if he's going to be blowing up people with a machine gun, that's just not what they want. So they want a story that's about his redemption. Although this is a story I read about Arnie on set. So they tell me if you think this sounds like a good guy or not, because I didn't like this. Apparently, on one day of filming, when this journalist is here that I read this piece by, he was uncredited, which is why I haven't said their name.
So the journalist didn't put their name on this
piece? Yeah, which is why I can't.
Which is why it's dubious.
Yeah, it is.
How is it journalism if you go, yeah, this definitely happened, but don't put my name on it?
Do you want to hear the story, though?
Yeah.
Apparently, he goes over to a crew member and goes, you could do the impression. He goes, open your mouth. So the crew member does, and he starts throwing almonds into this person's mouth. And because it's Arnie, the crew member kind of has to do it. So he's jumping around trying to catch these nuts. And then later complains about it and says, you know what, that's actually really humiliating. And Arnie just laughed at him and said, that's what separates leaders from followers. Which is, you know, I don't know if that's
you
true.
You should never force your nuts in another man's mouth.
Hear, hear.
Tall temper.
A massive casting search begins for John Connor. Cameron saying, what was Julius Caesar like when he was 13? Did he know then that he was going to be the Emperor of Rome? And imagine if such an important leader was from the Valley. But Edward Furlong is cast, like from the street. Like I read somewhere else that he was just playing basketball or baseball. Like,
I found that these two quite odd guys have started posting their junket interviews from the 80s and 90s as a podcast. And I found 2.5 hours of their Terminator 2 roundtable interviews where they talk to Edward Furlong when he's a little kid, you know, just after he's made this. And he was playing in the boys club of Pasadena,
right,
when they found him, and they asked him if he wanted to be in Terminator 2. And he went home to tell his aunt and uncle who he lives with, and they said, these people are trying to get money off you. You're right, not going to be in Terminator 2. Which is a fair.
Which is what you would do, yeah. I will say he was well cast, though, because I remember, like, there was no other kid, because I was around the same age as him when this came out. There was no other kid I'd ever seen in a movie that I really wanted to be as much as John Connor. I started dressing like him. I had like a black denim shirt, and I thought he was the coolest kid in a movie.
Yeah.
And normally it was adults that you idolize. You're like, oh, yeah, I want to be like them. And I got like Indiana Jones or something. But John Connor was like, I was properly into him.
You still seem like you want to be him.
I think I do a little bit. I've still got hair like him. I straighten my hair so I look like John Connor.
I mean, it is nuts how good he is. He's just this kid, you know, he's had no training and he is amazing. Mm. So, yeah, Linda Hamilton is obviously back. I think she did have quite a hard time, like she always does with him. I read to support this idea that James Cameron is hard work. Apparently the crew T-shirts, sort of as an homage to him, said, I'm not opinionated, I'm just always right, which is quite funny. Maybe we should get a few of those. Robert Patrick. Should I? Rude. James Cameron wanted someone for the T-1000, someone who is extremely fast and agile. If the T-800 can be compared to a human panzer tank, then the T-1000 series is a Porsche. And that's kind of it. Oh, no, I wanted to talk about the marketing and the posters, because Chris Tilley, You've said to me that you knew that Arnie was good before you saw this film. Is that true?
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I just don't remember the marketing. And I've seen the posters, but I don't remember.
Him on a motorcycle.
They did it in three different stages, okay, where they kept it a secret, a surprise early on. And then as the release got nearer, they started putting it in the trailers.
Right, okay. And there was just this huge marketing push with the tie-in. So there was a novelization, pinball games, an arcade game, cups, badges, trading cards, stickers, fucking Guns N' Roses song, You Could Be Mine is in the film. And the music video there in Terminator 2, which is obviously amazing. And this all worked brilliantly because it broke box office worldwide when it opened. It won 4 Oscars. It won a screenwriting award. And it set a very high bar for what computer-generated effects could do, particularly with the morphing effect that the T-1000 does. And obviously, there's loads of prosthetics and puppets from Stan Winston Studios, but the CGI was the big deal. And, you know, you talk about my overriding memory of this film prior to watching it this week is emerging, after the T-1000 is shattered and then just morphing back. Mm. Like, it's amazing.
It was the biggest film of the year in America, but it wasn't the biggest film of the year in England. I remember this.
In 91.
Yeah, because this is when I was paying attention to this nonsense.
Home Alone 2.
No, it's a film we've done actually on the podcast that came out, I reckon, about a month before in England. And they were reversed in America. It was second in America. And it was set in England.
No, I got nothing. I mean, I know you don't like Dead Air, but you're really...
Sorry, because I really want to get it right.
Give us a clue.
It's set in Nottingham.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Oh, my God.
1 point
to me. I'll tell
you
what, fair enough.
Got another quiz. That's another quiz. Great quiz.
Shut up.
No, been there, done that.
Did you read? I just want to put this bit of trivia in because it makes me feel sick. The noise, there's lots of different noises responsible like on the Foley for the noise that the T-1000 makes.
I just listened to the commentary, so I think I know this because they kept bringing this bloke out to say what the noises were.
So the one that I read that was like, what? For some reason, it makes me feel just sick is... when the T-1000 is transforming, one of the noises is you put a condom over a microphone and you dip it into porridge.
Ah. Well, another one for that noise when it's coming out of the ceiling is the oozing of dog food out of a dog tin.
Blech.
Somehow a condom over a microphone. It feels unnecessary that it's a condom. I think that's the weird thing.
I thought you were going to say the sound of the children's skulls being stamped on in the beginning. That is... pistachios being broken.
Oh no.
And it was, Stan Winston's team were saying it was quite miserable that day. They had to make 28 children's skulls.
Oh
to
my
be
god.
Stomped
that
on.
Is really
that's a really miserable day at work.
Now? Oh, that's annoying. Not them. All right, anyway, that's all I've got. So, shall we talk about the film?
Yes.
So, we're back in the blasted landscape of 2029, but it's loads better to me this time. I know you like the sort of
I like the lo-fi one.
Yeah. And there's a voiceover to bring you up to speed, which I think gets a pass from me because of the amount of time that has passed. But you do get to play on if you don't know who the goodie is and who the baddie is, because Sarah affirms that once again a Terminator has been sent back, but also a lone warrior. So I guess if you didn't know, you know, you can play around with who's good and who's bad.
My missus didn't know, and she got it a little bit before it was revealed, but she didn't know straight away. She wasn't expecting it at all.
Okay. And it's interesting because I think I did know when I watched it, because this is the film starts more or less exactly the same as T1, and then Arnie's here and he needs your boots and your motorcycle. So when he walks into the bar and he like wastes those dudes, you don't feel bad for them in the way that I felt bad for the punks, the Bill Paxton punks. And that can only be because
he doesn't rip
like...
anyone's heart. I feel worse if I see someone's heart being ripped out as opposed to someone who gets a little bit burnt on some hobs.
But he gets stabbed in the back as well. Like,
but nothing
the hob
lethal.
Thing is nuts. Like...
Bill Paxton gets his heart ripped out. Or it's not Bill Paxton. The other guy gets his heart ripped out.
I guess the idea is he gets burnt because he burnt him.
Oh, yeah. Fine. I mean, I will say the moment that he steps out of the bar and Bad to the Bone comes on, that's the moment you know you're in a very, very different film to the first Terminator.
Yeah. When they were writing the script, William Wisher came up with that idea of using that song, and Cameron said to him, no way, that's too on the nose. And then a few months later, when they're editing it, he called Bill in and said, I've just come up with this great idea. We're going to use Bad to the Bone on this scene. And Wisher...
went, yes, that's a great idea, James.
Yeah, well done.
Well,
never listen.
He did. He said he was annoyed at first, then stopped himself from complaining as he realised he'd won the argument and got what he wanted.
And none of the credit.
So,
is that a win?
No, it's like with me when I discuss films for this podcast with Alex.
Yeah, you have
just
to make
seed
someone
it, seed it six months
idea.
Earlier and then eventually you'll think it's his idea.
Yeah, there's a story about William Wisher. He actually suggested bad to the bow.
Very good. But yeah, I agree with you. You know, T1 is a gritty film to me, to my eyes. Mm. Like the way it looks, it is a horror film.
It is.
This is not that. And that made me relax more because I knew that I wasn't going to feel that sort of existential dread. I was going to be entertained and a little bit scared, but within the parameters of the safety of basically an action film.
We're having fun now, basically. Mm. Yeah. That's what that tells you.
Yep. So we meet Robert Patrick. Robert Patrick said he saw the T-1000 as a praying mantis. So head tilted forward and the ears being the focus of the movement. He is incredible in this. He's scary as fuck.
He saw, I know, this is the movie that made him, really. He had maybe one line, or did he have what? Does he have a line in Die Hard? Yeah, he's got one line in Die Hard 2. And that was pretty much his biggest thing today. And then he's sort of, they go, we want him for this. And he is absolutely phenomenal. I think watching it this time, like with that analytical podcast head on, you just like every movement he makes is phenomenal. When he's at the door to the foster parents' house and just his mannerisms, so good.
Yeah.
When he showed the script, Cameron showed the script to Stan Winston. Winston said that he told him he liked it, but he thought there was a problem with the villain that was like the Thing. He reckoned that the Thing wasn't a hit because the villain didn't have an identity because it was this shape-shifting thing. It never had a face. And so people couldn't, it wasn't memorable to people.
You can't latch onto it, yeah.
Exactly. And so he said, I feel like the character needs the face. And Cameron said, you're wrong. Went home and then called him up later and said, he's a cop.
Mm. Yeah.
I decided he's a cop. And Winston said, I wouldn't normally come out publicly say this, but Jim always takes credit for my stuff and I'm cool with that. So this is the one thing I'm going to take credit for. That was my idea to do something different.
It's a really clever bit at the start with Robert Patrick where they hide the fact that he's a shapeshifter because he kills the cop and then he reappears in the cop's uniform, and your brain immediately goes, he's stolen the cop's uniform.
But obviously it's clever because he's an authority figure, so he can go where he likes, do what he wants, and people won't question him.
Yeah.
He is an infiltration unit.
Yeah.
We got there in the end.
Yeah. But it is also, it's the same thing we were talking about with Terminator. It's a dismantling of the pillar that is the societal pillar that is the police force, because suddenly the police force is the enemy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it purposely closes up on to protect and serve on the side of the car, because it's ironic now.
Yeah. So then we meet John, who is sassing his foster parents and listening to Guns N' Roses. But he's got good reason to be angry.
It's not my mother, Todd.
Yeah, I love that line. Always, not my real dad. His mum is doing fucking chin-ups in an asylum, so he's bound to be a bit off the rails. So this, you know, this is amazing. Like, you know, the first time you see this, this is so galling and so upsetting that the progression that you haven't seen of where she was at the end of T1. She's obviously scared, but she seems quite resolute and she seems like, you know, she probably can handle what's ahead and anything can happen in her story, but it's gone very wrong, I think, for her. It would be interesting to see the progression, you know, presumably when she had him as a baby, she wasn't this person. But yeah, you know, and you know, John explains to his friend that she tried to blow up a computer factory, which is why she's now locked up. But yeah, it's just an amazing thing to do with that character. And so, you know, just like I say, so genuinely upsetting that her path has been, it's the right path and all the rest of it, but you know, it could have gone a different way.
And have you seen the deleted scene from this sequence?
No.
Where there's a dream sequence now where they cut out a scene where they forcibly give her drugs. They kind of beat her up actually. So it's more understandable when they get their comeuppance, the security guards, but she wakes up and Kyle Reese is there. Michael Biehn's in the film and he asks where their son is. He tells her he's the target now. He's all alone. You have to protect him. Tell her she's strong. He says, on your feet, soldier. Tells her that he loves her and it'll always be with her. And remember the message, the future is not set. And Linda Hamilton said she hated having to do that scene.
Right.
Because she didn't feel like Sarah was a character who needed to be motivated anymore, and certainly not by a man.
Mm.
That was the character from 7 years ago, and that wasn't the character now. And she said that halfway through the shoot, she actually rewatched the first film when she couldn't watch it because she hated her voice. She hated how weak the character was because she just mentally had changed so much and her perception of this character. So she demanded that they take the scene out, and Cameron says he took it out for time. But I think what she says does make sense.
Yeah, I mean, apart from, yeah, totally. Just the on your feet, soldier, is what she says to him in T1 in the factory when he's been hurt, when Caris has been hurt. So it could be being told what to do by a man, or it could be a nice reminder between the two of them, as you did this for me, and I'm not saying I need to do it for you, but I'm just reminding you of your strength.
Because they were in love and she loved him. And so, it's not just anyone.
And Cameron also said that it sort of took away from the second dream sequence. I don't think you can have two dream sequences.
Fair enough, that's the best point.
Well, Terminator 1 has two dream sequences.
And we meet Miles Dyson at Cyberdyne, who's just working on some top secret shit, which was developed from fragments of the T-800 left behind, which I fucking love, even though it is a bootstrap paradox and shouldn't make any sense. Mm. But I love that. And I didn't even really care that it was a bit like, oh yeah, we found this thing and there's not much behind that. I was just like, that's awesome. Because I'd forgotten that bit, to be honest.
Yeah. Weird, though, that they walk through a sealed door to get into the vault so we can see the arm and the microchip. And they walk through a sealed door into a room where everyone is wearing hazmat suits and they're not. And I'm just sort of like, well, what is it? Is it a room where you wear a suit or not? You can't have both. Yeah, those people should be like, what the fuck are you doing, Miles? Put a suit on.
Again, that's the most unbelievable moment so far in this movie.
Very soon we'll go shopping, but let's have a short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, so let's go to the Galleria and John is going to find out big time that his mum did not lie to him.
Did you see the game he's playing?
No.
Missile Command, a game where you have to prevent nuclear Armageddon by destroying the nukes before they hit the surface.
That is a good spot.
That's brilliant. So here,
I mean, unbelievable. It's 1991. Yes. No one was playing Missile Command in an arcade. No. Afterburner, sure, but not Missile Command, but it's a great gag.
Okay. I just feel a bit weird now, but fine.
Why?
That was just some geek stuff that I don't know anything about. Like,
don't be judging.
Sorry.
Judgment.
Because I've got some really geeky stuff coming up.
So here's Arnie with a box of roses, which isn't a box of roses, it's a fucking massive gun.
I nearly shouted out Guns N' Roses when I was in the cinema. I thought I was the only person that spotted that.
Oh, shit. Do you think it's a reference
to... Yes, I do.
I just thought it looked fucking cool. I never put two and two together. Wow.
It's amazing. And here's the T-1000. So what I love about this fight is mostly on Robert Patrick and his movements. And obviously there's some puppet work, but the way that his head hits the floor with his eyes open is just the scariest thing you've ever seen, because it should hurt and he's human, but not. And the run. Now, his run, you know how much I love Forrest Gump's run?
Mm-hmm.
This is the dark side of that run, because it's got the same focus, but he is a cold-blooded
killer. And it's all him. They didn't do anything special. That's how he runs, because what he did was he tilts his head slightly forward in the film because he feels like it gives him more of a sense of forward motion for the character.
Whatever it is, it's working.
Yeah.
Because you do believe he's as fast as a car. And he ain't as fast as a car.
You believe he could run forever as well, like Forrest Gump can.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Yep. I just have written down, way T-1000 runs. Yeah. It's the feds, it doesn't ball his fists either. Mm-hmm. It's all about aerodynamic.
Yeah, because you don't want to waste movement. You're a robot. You run on a battery. I know the batteries last forever, but you don't have any luxury to waste movement, eye movement, everything. It's really, really clever. So we've got this insane chase down.
Oh,
what?
Oh,
the chase.
The chase. The bit from the just as a kid, it was the most exciting thing. Watching the way Arnie reloaded the shotgun by twirling it round. I just remember seeing that and just going, I think I've just seen the coolest thing in a movie ever. This might be it. And then when the jump down into like the LA riverbed, it's like on the motorcycle.
Have you seen T2 3D?
The show at Universal Studios?
Yeah,
no, I think it had shut by the time.
I was watching some behind the scenes stuff from that and I wish I hadn't now because they showed him trying to do the shotgun thing and getting it wrong over and over again. And I was like, oh, I just want to, in my head, Arnie can just do that.
He
didn't even need to practice.
Yeah, forget that ever happened. So this is an insane amount of action. It's an amazing sequence. The best bit for me is just, you know, because it ties into the story and it's not just sort of, there's nothing wrong with mindless action, but it's brilliant when you can button that with a bit of story. So when the tire from the truck rolls out of the flames, and Arnie tries to shoot it because, you know, so John Connor's like, what are you doing? Kind of with a look. But he's like, anything can walk out of here. But you wouldn't think that, you know, because you've just, the explosion you've just seen.
I never put two together. So he thinks the wheel might be the T-1000.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think that's great.
And if he'd hung around a bit longer, he would have seen it, that he walks out, but he's gone by then anyway.
I don't think it is that because he would have shot. I think he would have shot at it, and he just sort of. I think you've added something better that James Cameron didn't think of. That.
Oh my god, again!
No, I really think he just thought it's the age old. Is that going to be the villain? No, it's just the tire.
Oh, okay. And then we get a bit of exposition. So about the T-1000, which I'm bringing up because I sort of third time of watching this, I'm still a little bit confused. Not that it detracts from the experience about what the T-1000 actually is capable of. So Arnie explains it's more advanced than I am. It can imitate anything it touches, but it has to be an equal size. It can't do complex machines. And I like in T-1, the way that Kyle Reese talks about, oh, why we're naked and machines can't come through. And that, I bought that. That kind of made sense. This thing about being equal size, I bought that. But then later on, the T-1000 like becomes a checkered floor. And I just didn't get
but
what was going on.
But it spreads out over the same floor area.
Oh,
that
okay.
The term mass would be. Yeah.
It's not a critic. It's just, I just didn't really, I was like, I really need to get a handle on what you're capable of. Because if you can't be anything, but it looks to me like you can be anything.
No, just solid objects. It's complex moving parts. I mean, look, I think some of this is just I think he's closing down arguments that people would have after this movie going, why just become a bomb? It's like, in the first movie, I never really bought that bit where Kyle Reese goes on about how nothing dead can travel back through the time jump, you know, and they're like, but the Terminator, like, yeah, he's got living skin on the outside. It's like, seems like a very selective time machine.
And there's a scene that they cut from the film that kind of explains a bit more where he's in John's room and he's touching everything. He's almost reading it all like Braille and he touches a poster and can tell that there's something behind it. And it's like he's sampling everything in case he wants to turn into anything. But I think Cameron felt like people will see this later in the film. We don't need this explained.
It's on me. I just got a bit hooked onto the exposition. And in this scene, this is just to talk about like the emotional underpinning of the story. This is where John realizes his mum was telling the truth. And actually, I think this is quite important. And it's probably why you wanted to be Edward Furlough or the character of John Connor when you were little, because he learns this really seismic thing, but it doesn't undo him. And it could do in a 10-year-old child. Like, I was raised this way. Then it was a lie. Oh my God, it's the fucking truth. Like, he's only 10, but he's cool with it kind of thing.
But I think he's really happy about it because I think he always wanted his mum not to be a psycho. And so the worst part of his life was when he thought it was all bullshit. And so now, rather than being like, oh, how do I deal with this? It's like, yay, celebration.
Yeah. And my reading of Sarah Connor's take on motherhood is, so you can argue that she's kind of checked out of it a bit because, so when she rails at the psychiatrist in the office, you know, that's her, she's being wound up, but by attacking the psychiatrist, she's ruining her chance to see her son in a legitimate way. Like, you know, this, you'll have to be in here for another 6 months. So that's kind of being a crap mum. I would argue she is the most devoted mum in a very extreme version of motherhood because She knows how important it is that her son is strong without anyone, and particularly without her. So she's raising him in this cold, brutal way so that she knows he will survive, and going against the instinct to protect him and to cosset him and to coddle him and to show him love. So later on when he's crying, which we'll come back to, she ignores him. But I think she's ignoring him because she would want to cuddle him. But
she makes him cry because she doesn't believe that he's strong on his own. Like, she believes he's making stupid decisions by coming to rescue her.
She's telling him off for that. Yeah, she's scolding him for that. And she's made him cry. Mm. But she doesn't then go to comfort him.
Well, he's crying because he thinks she's giving her a cuddle, but she's checking that he's not injured. Yeah. She's checking him for injuries. And so... Yeah. It's you see his vulnerability there because you realise all he really wants is a hug and she's not going to give that to him.
I feel that she feels her training of him to become this self-sufficient person has been interrupted by her being locked away. I don't think she's convinced that he can look after himself. I think the bit where she's talking to the psychiatrist, he goes, he's naked without me.
Yeah.
I think that's genuine. I think she does feel that he is at risk.
And that's what that dream sequence is telling you, because Carl Reese, who doesn't exist, is telling her that he's alone and he needs her. So that's what she's thinking.
Mm.
I don't think she is detached from her son. I think she loves him so much that she's sacrificing so much of her natural expression of her love for her son because she needs him to be tough as nails.
Yeah, it's tough love. It's literally tough love is what she's been doing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, as not a mother, I agree with you.
Yeah. So she's rescued, but she was kind of doing it anyway. Then, you know, she's got a...
Oh, the bit where she swings the truncheon behind her and skips down the corridor.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. And, you know, the classic, she's in an interview suite and you don't leave a paperclip in front of a psycho, but everybody does. So fine. And then she has her face licked by this evil mental health professional. So that's good, because then when she smacks him over the head, he kind of had that come in.
Yeah, we skipped over one bit that I only want to touch on briefly, because it's the first time you see the T-1000 actually shapeshift into a blade, which is where he kills
the foster
parents.
Yeah,
because it's coupled with two great moments, because again, I hadn't seen the first Terminator, but where Arnie puts on John's voice and goes, how's Wolfie? And it's like, Wolfie's fine, honey. And then it just pulls out to reveal it going through the milk carton and through Todd's thing. And I was just like, that's the first time you'd seen the blade. Like, that's the first time you realised the T-1000 could do that, and it's fucking brilliant.
It's brilliant. The voice stuff is all really good. And I look, it's quite a simple thing that if you can't get your head around what these machines can do, very basically, Arnie can do voices and Robert Patrick can do shapes. It's like, I get that. So this amazing sequence, like through the hospital, she's face to face with Arnie. She's screaming, he'll kill us all. And then he says, come with me if you want to live, which is just awesome.
The whole bit where he comes out of the lift and she's like scrabbling back on the floor, trying to get away from him. And then John runs out. I had tears in my eyes. It's a really, really great moment. This whole asylum sequence is brilliant, from the T-1000 putting the pin through they're twins in real life, those two guys.
We did them on Gremlins too.
Oh, they're the doctors in Christopher Lee's
lab.
They
both get to be in that one.
It's just great. This whole sequence is epic.
Yeah, it is amazing. And so the escape, I love the fact that when the T-1000 gets like this, he sort of like crab claws onto the car.
Mm.
My only gripe is that I wish we'd stop shooting it, because it has no effect and there's a lot of shooting of a machine.
It slows it down though.
I don't, but it doesn't really.
It does. Every time it gets hit, that's how they manage to get away, and indeed shooting it is how they snap off its hook, which is in the boot of the car.
Yeah, I don't know, it just didn't feel like it was doing
it. It looks fucking cool. Victoria, it explodes in massive silver holes. It looks great. It makes a sound not dissimilar to something out of The Thing when he splits it in two outside the lift and it goes
it's good.
So good.
The sound of the bullets is a microphone slamming into a bucket of yogurt
with a condom on.
And that's the one that looks CG, doesn't it? And then watching those behind the scenes, it's all completely practical. They call them foil flowers that open.
Yeah.
Mm.
There's a point
suit.
In the
so
steel
clever.
Mill where you can just tell that, because they look like they're protruding outwards rather than in, but only for a second.
Yeah, but it looks better than when it cuts to the CGI when they disappear.
Yes,
because obviously that has really dated now in a way that hasn't dated.
So we're on the run, and then a midsection voiceover, which I'm obviously not going to be a fan of, but it's fine. So
I didn't know if it was necessary either.
Not at all.
When they're
on the run and they're in that sort of compound.
Oh, yeah. Weirdly, this is the bit as a kid I got a bit bored.
Yeah. Because it's this voiceover. She's got some cool lines, Sarah Connor.
But she does get the thing that fucked me up as a kid, the dream sequence.
Yeah.
The nuclear war dream sequence. I've told you before on the show, that was my biggest fear in the like late 80s, early 90s, watching this scene and reading When the Wind Blows by Raymond Briggs. Those two things combined, I used to look out my bedroom window and be terrified of just seeing a mushroom cloud on the horizon, realizing I had about 10 seconds before the wave hit me and I was dead.
It must have been something at school, though, because I was equally terrified of the same thing. And I read all this like CND literature about when this comes, this is what's going to happen. Then I read all these Douglas Coupland books about that moment where you realize it's going to happen. I was obsessed with it for years. I don't feel like that anymore. I don't know why.
No, I don't either. Yeah. Well, it's because I think, you know,
we've got other shit to think about.
Exactly.
Other things to be worried about. So Sarah's VO is about, it's fine, but it's like kind of shoehorning this idea that Arnie is going to be like John's daddy kind of thing. Mm. I'm surprised by her at this point. Like John Connor and Arnie are talking and he's talking about his mum. You know, she was shacked up with a green beret and like any man she could learn something from.
Yeah, that line is a little bit like, John, she's still your mum, all right?
Yeah.
Don't she'd shack up with anyone who could teach her anything. Yeah. It's like, fucking hell, dude.
It just surprises me that the way of explaining how she's learned her skills, because it doesn't get much more explanation, is that she'd find a man and enter into a relationship with that man and get that man to teach her. And there are other ways that she could have done it. It surprises me that she needed a man kind of thing.
Yeah, agreed. And I also thought, I noticed for this time how similar the story arc is to Aliens. Where between Sarah and the Terminator, because in Aliens, Ripley doesn't trust Bishop because of what she witnessed in the first movie.
Yeah.
But over the course of the second movie, she comes to trust and respect him. That's exactly the story arc that Sarah and the Terminator have.
True. And also the way Michael Biehn teaches Sarah how to use weaponry in the motel in Terminator is very similar to Hicks teaching Ripley how to use a pulse rifle in Aliens.
It's the same scene.
It pretty much is, with one half of the same actors in as well. Yeah.
The most famous deleted scene happens around here, where it's when they're in the gas station, actually, just before here, and Sarah Connor peels back the skin on the Terminator's head and removes the learning chip in his head, which renders him brain dead. And she goes to hammer the chip and John stops her and he says, we need him, we need it. And she doesn't trust the Terminator at this point. She says, no. And they have a big argument. And then he turns around to her and says, but if I'm going to be this great leader, you've got to listen to me once in a while. And so she does. And she wakes him back up and the Terminator's like, was there a problem? He doesn't realise that he was nearly killed. But this is like the first step on the path to his future, which we lose from this sequence because it's the first time Sarah sort of starts realising, oh, John does have something here. He knows something. He's got something about him. And I'm gutted for them as well because how they shot the scene, because they're in front of a mirror, is they used Linda Hamilton's twin sister for this sequence. And they spent weeks working out that so that they could do the reflection, coordinating their movements. And it was never used. So all that time was completely wasted.
She does. I mean, she still pops up at the end in the in the factory, but that sounds like the, what is it? Is it duck soup? The Groucho Marx thing in front of the mirror?
Yeah, yeah. But also, you might like this, Alex, that the gas station pumps out the front of the gas station feature Bethnic Petroleum logo, which is from The Abyss.
Ooh.
That one's for you. Like I've got a better one for you later.
That's great.
So John Connor, when he's talking to Arnie in the parking lot just before they go and rescue Sarah, he's saying to Arnie, you know, I order you not to kill anyone. So you now can't kill anyone from this point on in the film. Mm. Is that showing that that's the guy, that's why he's a good leader, because he's compassionate?
Yeah, he's got this moral compass that the mother lacks in a scene
so
coming
where
up.
Did he learn that from? Because you learn that sort of thing from your parents, don't you? Like,
do you? I mean, nature versus nurture. It's a big question, isn't it? But
because she's taught him to be like to be a survivalist. Mm-hmm. But where did he learn?
Not from her, because she's quite surprised the moment in Miles Dyson's house.
Yeah.
When she realizes why he's come and what he's done and how she is different to him. She's lost her humanity, but John has this inherent humanity about him.
Yeah. So, like you say, she goes to kill Dyson. So she has a bad dream, and then she turns into a fucking Terminator.
We've already taught the Terminator at this point. Hasta la vista, baby. John's taken the time to teach him that. Cameron talks about, you know, when he wrote I'll Be Back, he was just writing a line in it. He never thought it was going to go on to become what it was. He does say he was never sure about this. He was a bit worried because he was writing a little bit of a catchphrase.
Yeah. It's a bit broad, I think, some of that
for
stuff.
For Arnie here, and he was really pleased that it landed the way it did because he thought, you know, this is one of those things where I'm so aware what I'm doing.
I suppose it's a bit like a causal time loop, because before it was a thing, it wasn't a thing. And then in the playground, I was like, hasta la vista. And you're like, what's that a thing from? And then you see it, you're like, oh, that's wicked. But when Edward Furlong's in the corner, he's like, and we say hasta la vista, you're like, no one says that.
No one's ever said that. No. But because it's American, you probably, when you're sitting in like the suburbs of Leeds going, that is what they're saying in America. That is definitely what they're saying in America right now. I must start saying it. Hasta la vista, baby. I just saw this movie in America.
Well, he's living in Mexico. He lived in Mexico, though, where people would have literally said hasta la vista.
Hmm?
He's just added the baby.
Yeah.
To be fair.
Yeah, and also Sarah's Mexican has probably improved a lot from the very end of Terminator, where she has to look into a guidebook to go,
yeah,
gasoline, por favor. You know that. Yeah. It says gasoline on the pumps, and I'm pretty sure everyone knows por favor. You don't need to go, one second here. Gasoline, por favor.
I was really threw me. I thought she was going to ask for directions, like really specific. Like, I'm lost. Can you help me? She just says, yeah, gas, please. Ridiculous. So when she goes to kill Dyson.
There's a lot of, in that scene, we've done Terminator, but in that scene, there's a lot of her going, what did he say?
Yeah.
What did he say? What did he say? You're like, you get away with two of those and it's like, find a different way to get this information across.
So she's really doing it. That she really is going to kill Miles Dyson. She just kind of misses, but she is going to kill him, definitely.
Yeah, she is the Terminator now. They even, actually, when she's in the car, she's got the glasses on to go to kill him. They play a bit of Terminator music for the first time over her.
Yeah.
So we're watching the T-800 gain humanity while we're seeing her having completely lost hers.
Yeah.
It's really great. So like I say, you know, it's this mirror image. It's really interesting the way they flipped it in that way and suddenly...
And then because she's riffed on motherhood, like there is a clear line of feminist critical thinking, which is that men do these things that they do because there's an innate jealousy over the ability to... Which I'm not saying I buy into, but, you know, there is an argument that there's some of the frustration and the jealousy and the rage about not being able to create life in that way is what leads to an outpouring of whatever, in other ways, artistically even, necessarily.
Is that the men like you speech that she gives?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So she's just riffed on
that. The one that I did at the start about creating a hydrogen bomb,
So she's riffed on that. But then I think it is the kid, Dyson's kid, that makes her stop, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, so that, which I like.
Please don't kill my daddy.
Yeah, of course. No, and he's like going to take one for his dad. Like,
he's a brave little kid.
Yeah, Joe Morton, who plays Dyson, does a very good scared face.
Oh my God, he's amazing. Mm. He's so good.
He's a brilliant actor.
Yeah. So he teams up with the gang, basically, because they sort of talk him through it and they're like, look, 3 billion deaths. And he's like, yep, definitely, let's destroy everything.
Well, on the commentary, there's someone compared him to Frankenstein, but a Frankenstein who gets to fix his creation rather than sort of see it go out into the world. And
I would have quite liked it if he'd had a moment where it looked like he was going to change his mind.
I think so as well. I think...
Because it's his life's work, or it's meant to be. And when they're in the building and when they finally have all the barrels lined up, I just wish he was like, I really don't want to do this.
I wish that after Sarah has tried to kill him with a sniper rifle, walked into his house, pointed a gun at him, and his kid has had to protect him before she finally gives up. Later on, I'd probably ask before I lit a cigarette in his house. She's just fucking sitting on the kitchen counter, a food preparation area, puffing away.
You would absolutely do that.
I would do
after
that.
After a few beers.
But I'm just sort of thinking, you've just tried to kill this guy and now you're smoking in his house. They don't look like they smoke there. I thought it was very rude.
Vicky mentioned the barrels. Those barrels have a sign on them. It's polydichloric euthanol. Do you know where that chemical comes from? What movie, Alex?
Polydichloric euthanol.
It's a film that we'll never do on the podcast.
Oh, okay. Well,
called Outland.
We are doing Outland on the podcast. That's a really great reference that he's used. Yeah. Of course we're doing Outland. It's brilliant. Peter Hyams, love him. Yeah,
it's not you doing the film. It's Vicky.
Yeah, it's okay. No, sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead. So, Mark.
Oh, wait.
What?
That's what I was going to say.
Go on.
It's great after Sarah does give that whole big speech. She goes, you know, you don't know what it's like to create something, have something growing inside you, to create life. Do you know what John's line after she gives that big speech is? Yeah, Mum, we have to be a little more constructive.
Yes. No, it's happening though, more and more. He's taking charge.
Yeah, shut up, Mum.
It's a little bit like, but shut up.
It's good character work because he's becoming John Connor. He's becoming the John Connor.
Yeah. So it's awesome. It works perfectly because she's like, I created you. You are right. I feel better about that. The system's working kind of thing.
Yep.
So Miles dies. Which
oh
I
my
do
God.
Think
this whole heartbreak.
Yeah.
Awful. I don't know how, like, it's the little shallow breaths that he's given.
Yeah.
I really, we'll get onto it later on, but this whole Cyberdyne assault has real Matrix, Climax of the Matrix vibes for me. When they arrive at Cyberdyne, it's like Neo and Trinity storming the building where the agents are holding Morpheus. I think it owes it a debt.
The SWAT leader who says move it when he realises what's about to happen.
Yeah.
You can't see all of his face.
I know who he is.
You do, don't you? Because I mentioned him recently. All right, you say it.
No, you say it.
It is
your brother.
No, it's someone. It's I can give you a clue. So we mentioned in Total Recall a famous TV actor who was in Total Recall.
Oh,
another Arnie film.
Cameron Thingy.
It's Hank from Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Oh, it's not.
Yeah,
it is.
So he was in Arnie films twice in 2 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, in little roles where no one noticed him.
Oh, I love him.
I'm not sure about a silent alarm that also broadcasts alert on every computer screen. Surely if someone's in the building, you don't want to know that they've triggered the alarm. It shouldn't be like, alert, alert. Look at all these flashing things on this TV screen.
That's a very good point. A massive shootout. Sarah, John and Arnie are out. I mean, he can't kill anyone. Is it? It's fine, but it's a bit. I don't want police officers to be killed, but a lot of people are getting shot in the legs.
Yes.
It's fine.
It's for the greater good, Vicky.
But he does the minigun scene. I remember that's obviously as a kid, you're like, this is incredible. I don't think I'd seen a minigun. I don't think I'd seen Predator at this point. Maybe I had. Anyway, the bit where he doesn't hit anyone in the legs in that scene. He shot people in the legs. When he's leaving. Because he gets 0.0.
But the decimal point is weird, isn't it?
Because it is a bit weird.
What's a half?
What is 0.4 of a casualty?
It's like a limb?
If it's above 0.5, might they die?
They're in critical care. Yeah, probably. So we're off to the steel mill. Now, help me out because we've picked up in this sequence a truck of liquid nitrogen.
It's a bit convenient.
Yeah,
isn't
so
it?
Did that does that I want to be gentle on the script, but if that's a coincidence, massive coincidence, we're going to a steel mill. So the two things that would cancel each other out.
I've written convenient twice.
So the liquid nitrogen, it's not picked up. It is just a coincidence, isn't it?
Well, maybe it's going to the steel mill. But this all feels very much like two Death Stars in Star Wars to me.
Wow, what do you care when a helicopter flies under a bridge, for real?
Yeah.
Amazing.
I don't know if you can see this or if this is just... Because I ended up... The commentary I watched was on the extended cut. But you can see in that the T-800 in the helicopter has four arms suddenly.
T-1000.
Sorry, the T-1000 has four arms.
I've seen a still of it.
Yeah. It's awesome. So he's controlling the helicopter with these arms and then he's shooting with the arm. But you can't see it properly. And if they've gone to the trouble to create that, show me a shot of it.
Yeah, that would be really weird and uncomfortable at the same time.
They're coming out of his stomach. Well, he should be an uncomfortable character, though.
Oh, yeah. That's so funny, because I watched Naked Gun 2.5 last night, where she slaps him with a third hand.
So that's why you're asking us for next week's film.
Yeah. I've run out of movies. I'm rewatching Naked Gun 2.5.
Did you watch the football?
The T-1000 freezes and shatters. That's the Stan Winston model. Look on his face is amazing. This is the bit I remember the most. Like the look, he looks... Like, you cannot believe what has happened, which is brilliant.
But this is the brilliance of Stan Winston. So we could have created that effect, and I think we should do it for Halloween, because how that was done, it looks expensive. They taped tinsel to Robert Patrick and then sprayed him with fake snow.
Wow!
That's how you get the frozen look. And the other bit's a bit tougher. They then did the same thing to a double amputee, and that's how they made his leg snap off.
Yeah.
But and then when he explodes, he's just filled with chrome shards and glitter.
Glitter.
It's just normal glitter.
That's nice.
Yeah.
It's the same beat as where the T-800 is killed in the Terminator, though. The fake death of the villain just before it's revealed.
This is a nitpicky thing, but because we've coincidentally picked up the liquid nitrogen and coincidentally we're in a steel mill, he can reform. Mm. And the T-1000 is no worse off for what just happened to him.
So he's glitching. So that's the thing. There is a weakness suddenly because, you know, he touched the iron bar and it starts coming up his hand.
Yeah.
So... there's something wrong. So suddenly there is a weakness to him.
Oh, is that why he's sort of like, broom across his...
The glitches.
I thought he was just like readjusting.
No, it's making him malfunction.
I definitely missed that. And so then we've got a fight in an industrial setting, as we had before. Arnie is bested a couple of times, which is a very weird feeling because we feel like he's going to die, but he's a goodie. And then the T-1000 gets to Sarah... and she's pinned by her shoulder And he says, call to John so that he can imitate her voice. And he's got about it. And he's like, I know this hurts. And then he goes for it. So this, I've only just understood it as I was writing the notes. So he's completely misunderstood humanity because the pain to her does not matter. Like after everything she's been through, as fucking if she's about to call to her son to get him killed, she's not going to give him what he wants after everything, after all this. Mm. But then she says, fuck you. So is it because she says, fuck you, that he can then imitate her? Because how would he then appears as her, and it's her twin in real life. So there's two Sarahs. Yeah. So how did he do her voice without her saying what he wanted her to say?
It's because she spoke.
So she but has also,
he's touching her, so that's how he can become her. And so, yeah, he's got her voice now.
Yeah, I don't know if he needs to hear her voice. Does he need to hear her voice to imitate her?
So why is he asking her?
I think he's just trying to get her to lure John.
Yeah, he's trying to get her to lure John. Sorry,
if he can already imitate
her
voice, he'd just do it himself.
Yeah,
why does he need her to say it?
Yeah.
Maybe he can't imitate her voice until he's in her body.
Maybe. That's fine. I just, at the time, I saw the scene for what it is, which is her saying, you've misunderstood this very much.
He needs her to speak so he can copy her, or to be in her body so he's got her vocal cords.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah. And I mean, I wasn't keen on this. So Arnie is impaled and he's dead. And then it's like, oh no, he's fine because he's got a spare battery.
Yeah, that's a little bit convenient. But, you know, you want him to die, and then come back from the grave to save the day. The bit that always bothered me, and I don't know whether it was something Cameron, if he'd made his own Terminator 3, had planned to come back to, but it just seems a weird moment where his arm gets torn off in those cogs. And so you've got pretty much exactly what was left from Terminator 1 all over again in the factory. And so when he destroys himself and the CPU and is lowered into the molten pit, that arm is still there to
Very
be
good
found.
Point. Oh, no, don't they throw the arm in? They throw the arm in.
No, they throw the arm in that they found at Cyberdyne and the microchip processor. His arm gets ripped off in those cogs and he just pulls off.
But you're probably right. He is. Yeah, he's leaving the same setup, isn't he?
Yeah, he's
just
leaving,
in case.
Exactly. Honestly, I think, it's too weird not to be mentioned because they make a big deal of making sure everything is in there. And you're like, apart from the fucking arm that was left in the cogs.
Yeah. So Sarah nearly saves the day, but it's Arnie's movie, so she can't. So the T-1000 is like cleaved in half and then it's blasted into molten metal and it's writhing and screaming and all the people that is imitated.
It feels quite the thing then.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Now, I would say, I asked myself, like, why is this? Why is it screaming? It's a machine. It shouldn't have an emotion. But I wondered if maybe it's had a good time and like has enjoyed what it's done and has learned and is quite gutted to be checking out in this way. Because in theory, in this universe, it should fall into the metal and maybe there'd be some computer noises. But it's screaming, firstly in pain, but also like with disappointment and it's been thwarted and it's not going to get to do what it wanted to do.
But it's also failed at its mission. I think we've got to assume there are certain lines that the T-1000 says that implies that it has an understanding of pleasure. Like it's been programmed in some way to enjoy this, to make it a better killer. Like when the police motorcycle rides up and he goes, that's a nice bike. It's like, why would you say that? What's that? Unless you are seeing this is a useful tool to me to carry on this mission that I'm enjoying.
Yeah.
Classic Cameron here, though. The sound editor had pulled together some animal screams and squeals to use there, and Cameron listened to them and said, nope, no good. And he just made the noises himself.
Did he?
He's classic Cameron. I can do it better.
Anything so an animal
him.
Can do.
That's
we
him, you're
fucking
hearing.
Lion? No. I'll do it. That's amazing. Arnie gets a bit emosh and sacrifices himself
Me
to save the world. I didn't. But I like that Sarah gets that moment because they are both heroes. So if she can't have the moment that pushes the T-1000 into the metal, then she gets the moment that saves the world.
It's the thumbs up that does it. Gets me every time when he gives
oh,
a
bless
thumbs
him,
up.
Yeah. Like, oh. And it is quite dad. I mean, I wrote this down and then I thought, is it weird? The way he says to John, doesn't he say, I have to go away, which is quite a dad thing to say because it's simplifying the truth.
But I'll be back in first Genesis and then Dark Fate.
So what Bill Wisher wrote for this scene was a callback, actually, because I don't remember earlier in the film, John asked the Terminator, are you afraid not even of dying? And in this scene, Wisher wanted John to, when he realised what he's got to do, John would ask him if he's scared. And the Terminator says yes, and then jumps in.
Ooh,
and that's how he dies. And Cameron said to him, It feels wrong. I think there's more emotion to be mined here. Let's rethink it. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we got this scene. Although they realized when they were testing it, people didn't understand why the Terminator wasn't just jumping in.
Right.
Why it was happening so slowly. And so it's actually in post that they did. He's not on. You can't see his face when he says, I cannot self-terminate. So that came out of a test screening.
Wow.
Okay.
So those things can be good.
Oh, no. I mean, these guys swear by them.
And then we're out. Sarah says, if a machine can learn the value of human life, maybe we can too, which is heavy and also true.
It's a shame we didn't get the alternate ending, though. Have you ever watched?
You sent it to me. I do remember a little while ago. You were like, what the F is this?
I'd never seen. I only saw it about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
It's the most balmy thing you've ever seen. It's like, how, what, you shot this with a view to at some point, including it's set in the future. And John's an adult and Sarah's an old woman and they're in a playground and she's watching him play with his son, her grandson, and she does this voiceover and you're like, this is hideous. This is not...
Because of the aging makeup or...
Just that I
need, looks weird. The aging makeup. I mean, it does look a bit like she looks now, but it's...
Oh! Isn't she... There's a line in it like, you know, something about Michael Jackson. The voiceover talks about Michael... I can't remember it. You need to watch it. Yeah.
But it's the playground from earlier and it's back to normal.
Yeah.
But Cameron said he took it out because we were laughing at it, because he felt it made it all too convenient. He said, if the future is changeable, then the battle must continuously be fought because the battle between good and evil is eternal. And so that's why he got rid of it. But I do, in terms of the ending, I do like the fact that we've had two Christ-like moments in this film with the Terminator and Dyson both dying so we can live.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes back to that well twice, but I think it works both times. They're both really emotional deaths.
Mm. That's it. We're out. Would you like to do the bits?
Dun, dun,
yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
What was your best scene, Alex?
I'm not breaking it down into anything smaller than the entire attack on Cyberdyne Systems. I think it's absolutely brilliant, that whole sequence. Or the helicopter flying under the bridge. I never get over how awesome that is. Or the truck and motorcycle chase. Or the T-1000's death. Or Arnie's death, any one of those.
And
I really love this movie.
I think I'll go Arnie's death, which I wouldn't have thought of coming into this one, but I found it really got to me this time emotionally, and I think it's a really unexpected way to end this spectacular film, especially watching it back-to-back with Terminator. If you told me that, you know, the next film, this character's going to make you cry, basically, when he dies, you would have said, no way,
that's
Jose,
yeah.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Mm-hmm. I love...
Gasoline, por favor.
I love the look on Edward Furlong's face in the Galleria when the roses fall away and there's the massive gun and then there's someone else. I think that's brilliant. I love Hasta la vista and the shattering and the remorphing. But the death of both Terminators in the steel mill is the best bit. Your most valuable whatever, Chris.
I mean, there's a lot to choose from here. You've got Linda Hamilton, you've got Arnie, you've got Robert Patrick, you've got Stan Winston, you've got Dennis Muren, who we haven't mentioned from ILM, who was doing all these digital effects. But I think it's got to be James Cameron. I mean, this is all him in a way that even the first film wasn't, because of technological limitations. So, yeah, I'm giving it to Big Jim. Although, I mean, obviously then I've got to credit everyone else that he might have nicked stuff from. Jimbo.
I almost want to say Arnie again. This is a role that it is his best role. And I know that's sort of a double-edged sword because he's playing a machine and it's like, and yet him playing a machine, he is absolutely brilliant at. But he's just the transformation from one to two to be, like you say, so likable in this is great. But I genuinely think Edward Furlong is one of the greatest children on screen I've ever seen. It's so natural. He's so likable. I thought he was cool as well. And I'm giving it to Edward Furlong.
That's nice. I'm going to give it to Linda Hamilton because the transformation is just nuts and you buy it and it's mad. And she's basically chewing the place up. And obviously the physical strength of her is a big thing, but there are other ways you could have shown that journey, but you just meet her and she's it. And it is bonkers. So her. What would you change?
Did you bother watching Dark Fate?
No.
This is why I gave it to James Cameron, actually, because you realise how much influence he potentially had on her when you see her performance in Dark Fate.
Yeah, I read some interviews around it for the prep for this, and I don't want to see it.
No, don't. People saying, oh, it's the best one since the second one. Oh, it's actually quite good. It's not. It's a piece of crap.
With every new Terminator movie that comes out, and I say comes out like there's going to be another, there probably won't be, not for a long time, but with every new Terminator movie that comes out, you realise that T3, Rise of the Machines, is actually not that bad. 100%. It makes it look a lot better.
It's sort of the next best one.
Poor Jonathan Mostow, like, competing with James Cameron. Everyone's like, oh my God, it's not the same. And you're like, look at what other people have
and
done.
And every time you get dingbats going, oh no, this is actually the best one since the second one. And it never is.
No. It's better than Genesis. Take from that what you will.
What would you change, Chris?
Okay, so I get what they were trying to do here, in terms of the incredibly important character of John Connor starting out as a normal, bratty kid. And it works much better here than actually they did in Phantom Menace. That's exactly what George Lucas did. You know, the most important person in the world, the most evil person in the world, starts out a bit of a brat. But while Edward Furlong's a better actor than Jake Lloyd, I still don't think he's great. So I'm going against you, Alex.
What?
I mean, just that, like, that scene where he realises that his mum's gone to kill Dyson. She's going to blow him away! And it's like, oh, no. Some of those line readings kill me. Sometimes I think he's good, but sometimes
he's great,
I think
he's... He's like, put your leg down. Put your foot down.
Yeah. Sometimes I think he's really bad. So I actually think he is the weak link here. So
No, it's like a T-1000 being shot.
And I've just recast... James Cameron could do that better. I've just recast Edward Furlong. That's okay. What I've done.
Wow, that's massive.
Sorry, everyone.
What about you?
I'd change what Chris just said.
Go back in time and...
I wrote down... I'm
not going to say bump.
I honestly don't know. I don't know.
I think it might be time to leave.
That's dark fate.
That is a low point even for us.
I think he was talking over. Hopefully people didn't hear it.
Yeah, what did he say?
I'm not saying it
really
again.
Really abbreviated. I didn't
I'm not saying. I literally won't say those words.
No. I'll say it in the pub.
Oh my God!
I'll text you.
Yeah, I don't have a change. I honestly, this is like
okay.
This movie is. I'm sorry. I tried. I sort of went through it, and I was looking at it, going, "What would
it's,
I change?"
It's unacceptable to come without a change.
I can't think of something
you just,
to change.
You come
about
with something
this movie.
Funny, then that's what I do.
Yeah.
Try and think of something funny quickly. Vicky,
right.
You go.
All
you
right. So I would like to have seen more flashbacks to show the progression of Linda, Sarah as a new mum. And there must have been a shift. When you have a baby, you can't be the way she is. Like literally a newborn baby and she's on her own. So the nuclear playground scene, I'm taking that to be the way she was with her kid when he was like 3 or 4. And then she was like, this shit is real. I need to start toughening him up and whatever. But to show the progression from, quote marks, normal mum to gradually teaching this boy the skills she thinks he will need to survive, as well as to him distancing herself emotionally from him in order to make him the toughest person in the world. So I would have liked some flashbacks where she's like normal mom and then she's like, shit, this isn't going to work. I need to become this person that she is.
Mm.
That's it.
Alex?
I really would like to know what a full house is when one of the twins gets a full house
on the coffee cup.
And it seems like he's like that was, you know, must be my lucky day. I'm like, had he actually won quite a lot of money?
I think I can tell you because you collect the cups.
Right.
And then if you get a full house, if you get a deck of cards, it's poker cups. Yeah.
What would you get?
I don't know. That's a great
change, though. Well done. I'm glad we gave you that time.
Yeah. We'll edit that. So I'll probably just drop that in. It'd be like, oh,
well done. Yeah.
Thanks very much. Yeah. Oh, shit, that's me. I sort of folded up on my paper like, great, lovely business.
Great podcast, everyone.
Well done. It's time for The Verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
So, Chris, do you want to guide us through this thing? This would be your week if we hadn't had the Bits Boys?
Yeah, I forgot it was my week, actually, because the Bits Boys did it. I forgot. Apologies, everyone. Mm. So, who's going to go first? Alex is, because I definitely know what he's picking.
100%, I am picking Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Quite simply, it's the film that I enjoyed more. I literally just said I can't find anything to change about it, so there's your answer. But yeah, it's the movie that I enjoy because it's got an accessibility that I love. I like its humour, and Terminator is just a little too grim for me and feels a bit like an old movie, where as Terminator 2 was released at a point in my life when I was sort of when I was a kid and enjoying movies. Did that make any sense?
You're rambling a bit then.
I was rambling. It's not been a great end for the show. To the show for me. There you go. I'm England playing that team that they didn't do very well in the second half with football reference.
They can't all be winners. Mickey.
So I will say, I only wrote this morning because I didn't know. And I was thinking maybe I should let you change, like, you know, influence me in the room. And then I thought, no, it's lazy not to write anything. So
can
then,
you tell? do you want to know what's happened? I'll just be completely honest with you, rather than trying to make up. I've folded up my verdict and it's down there in that massive pile of paper and I can't find it. And
wow.
I don't know what to tell you.
He cannot speak off script. He's like Ron Burgundy.
There's not a word that I've said on any podcast we've recorded that I haven't written down beforehand.
I'm Alex Sain.
I did once see your notes and it had me saying, I'm Vicky Crompton. And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
That's
bad. I don't mean to shame you, but I am always going to say that. You don't need to have that in front of me.
Stop pulling back the curtain!
Come on, Vicky, do your verdict.
So rewatching T1 as a grown-up had a massive effect on me. It was still terrifying, but now that I'm not 13, I can see the magic of the script, the precision of the direction, how good a director James Cameron is, and the effects on a comparatively tiny budget. And to me, in T1, Arnie's more impactful because being the good guy is like, meh. But as a feminist hero, there is not much to touch Sarah Connor in T2. So it's a really difficult decision. So to be honest, this is always going to be a crap reason because there's not very much between them, is there? So my reason is T2 should be fucking good because it cost 1 billion pounds, right? And it was, so you should be good. So T1 is so much better than it needed to be. And for the clarity of the vision, for the scale of the belief on a what is a tiny budget, effectively, it's the Terminator, T1.
Whoa. I was not expecting that.
Chris.
I was not expecting that.
Neither was
that.
I.
It's fallen to you on your sort of week.
Sure.
You're going to be deciding.
So, I love The Terminator, and I thought this might be an Aliens deal for me, where both are five-star movies, but the shock and fear and awe of that original got my vote. And last time I watched T2 was about 10 years ago, and I really felt like the effects had dated, the CG effects had dated in a way that the first film hadn't dated. But I love this one extends and expands the story. I love that it gives us three badasses rather than just one. I love finding out that this is what James Cameron envisioned from the beginning. I'm so glad he was given the budget and the technology caught up because Terminator 2 is my winner.
Yay!
That's the right result.
Watching them back to back, it was like the reward, a spectacular reward after this tough, dark journey. And those CG effects, I just do think, still look a bit ropey these days, but it doesn't matter.
It's weird. I don't know whether it's because it is a time capsule for me and I just sort of, I'm back like watching it for the first time, but I do not mind the liquid metal stuff. I don't think it's that bad. Really don't. Hey, Terminator 2, Judgment Day is our winner. It is now declared here on Clash Pod as the greatest Terminator film in history out of the two ones that you would actually include in that sentence. Right then. Vicky, you gave us a clue on Tuesday for our movies next week. Remind us what the clue was.
It was Fear Thy Neighbour.
Fear Thy Neighbour. I'll just explain what that laugh is. Vicky is very, very excited to announce this movie.
Isn't she with that clue?
I honestly think you, Victoria, think you may have selected the greatest pairing ever on Clash
Pod. I'm really worried that no one else is going to think that. So I'll tell you what you're doing. So, Alex, you're watching The Burbs.
Yeah.
Brilliant film. And Chris, you're watching Arlington Road, which I wrote a 10,000-word essay about at university, and I can't remember a word of it, but that's how much I love it.
Yes, go watch Arlington Road. I think that's a bit more obscure than The Burbs, but
no.
It's well worth a watch. Mm.
So that's your pairing for next week. Do your homework. The Burbs versus Arlington Road. If you haven't seen either, well, I think you're in for a treat with both. We'll be talking about those next week. So, once again, thank you very much. Congratulations to Terminator 2 Judgment Day. It is the winner. Thank you to the boys on The Best Bits for their suggestions. That was a whole lot of fun. Don't forget to subscribe and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, and also follow us at ClashPod on Twitter and Instagram. Back on Monday, talking The Burbs. Bye bye.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
That was all on a script.
go fuck yourself.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.